You are exploring a rugged mountainous region of jagged peaks and yawning chasms. Stretched across one black and bottomless canyon is a wooden suspension bridge. You must reach the other side, and carefully you step out onto the bridge. It sways dangerously with your weight, but it seems safe enough.
Welcome to the Lovecraft Geek. And I'm the Crypt of Cthulhu Keeper, Robert M. Price. It's good to be with you after a long time where I didn't have all that many questions to answer. But I guess I got enough at the moment to essay a new geek. So let's take a look at the old slime bucket and see what's in it. Slime, I guess, right? Okay, this from Anthony Purchase. He says, of late I have begun to seek out anthologists such as yourself who have delved into the Stygian depths of supernatural fiction and returned with indescribable horrors to infect us all. Groff Conklin's The Supernatural Reader is amazing, and good old August Derleth's anthologies are huge favorites. I would really enjoy hearing your opinion on what makes a good anthology, or for that matter, a good anthologist, as well as some examples that I can immediately rush out and get. Many thanks for all the information and honest entertainment over the years. Okay, Anthony, thanks. Have you got the great Wise and Frasier Great Tales of Terror and the Supernatural? That's got all kinds of good stuff in it, including some Lovecraft, which I know you must have otherwise, but what the heck. But that's a huge book with lots of great material in it. As an anthologist, I tend to... Well, it depends on what sort of a book I'm putting together. Like for the Chaosium books, they were all, well, I should say are, they're still going on, thematic in the sense that they were really compiled and conceived as source books for gamers who enjoyed Call of Cthulhu but didn't quite have the background on the various names and deities and places. You know, who are these? Why are they even here? What's the point? Who's Cthulhu or Cthuga, and what's the difference, and so forth. And I was approached by Chaosium to put together the major stories and about each entity or each place or whatever, and so I've done a bunch of those with more in the works. And my inspiration for how to do that was Lynn Carter's abortive collection, that series, starting with one collection called Spawn of Cthulhu, which sort of centered on Whisperer in Darkness, I believe, right? And it's been a long time. He put together materials that must have influenced Lovecraft and given him ideas. Then the pivotal story, and then other stories by other writers on the same theme since dependent upon Lovecraft. I thought that was pretty neat, and so I took the same approach. I would include stories that seem to have been in Lovecraft's mind when he wrote, and from Arthur Macken, John Taine, whoever, and then Lovecraft's story, and then stories by successors, and so on. And I think that's pretty neat to be able to trace the evolution of the whole idea and the motif, etc. Now, not everybody's going to want to do that. It's a kind of a specialized thing, but because that's what I was doing, I took the risk of repetition. Like in an ordinary anthology, it seems to me you don't want a whole bunch of stories about the same thing. And of course that depends on how general the collective theme is, but it can, oh, I guess it's all right if you're not going to just read the thing from cover to cover. You need a bit more variety usually, unless, of course, you're kind of using it for research as much as entertainment. But I took that risk in those, right? Okay, enough about Hastur for Pete's sake and so on. I figured, yeah, that's the right thing to do here. I also took the risk of putting quality aside a bit, because I wanted to satisfy the reader's curiosity. There were some older items, some things from 50s fanzines and so forth, and then on the other end from 80s fanzines that were not all that great necessarily, but again, the point was to see what had been done on the topic. Ordinarily, I wouldn't do that, at least if the anthology didn't have that focus. I have done other ones for Fedogen and Bremer where there was the same sort of risk I'm running, where, like the Tales of the Lovecraft Mythos, Acolytes of Cthulhu, and so forth, where I was trying to compile old material that you might not ever have seen, or if you've heard of it, you didn't know where to go to find a copy. So that wasn't as thematic, but it did have uneven stuff. But I always wanted to see this stuff, and I figured others did, and apparently they do. I've done other ones where the theme is pretty darn broad, like Worlds of Cthulhu that came out from Fedogen and Bremer. These stories tended to be kind of piggybacking on Lovecraft stories. But, of course, there's a big range of stories by Lovecraft, and these were different approaches to what happened next. And so I didn't think there was any monotony or any risk of it there, though it did have a general type, a general category. You know, naturally, you're going to want to have some focus. Another one that I hope will soon be coming out is called... From Secret Asia's Blackest Heart, which is a phrase Lynn Carter used that I kind of liked. And all of these stories are Lovecraftian, though none of his are in it. And I decided to have them all in Asia, or that general cultural sphere, including Egypt. There, again, you know, there's all kinds of cultures and traditions and legends you can draw upon, and I've got great stuff like a Mark Rainey story, Warlords of Leng, and Anne Schwader's The Death Verses of Yan Ho, and oh boy, it's great stuff, you're gonna love it. So, diversity there. Another one, same idea, would be Fumblers at the Latch, which is just generally a bunch of nifty Lovecraft-oriented stories by all kinds of great writers, modern writers. This kind of anthology, I don't go for reprints at all. I'm not trying to get archaic gems and all that from hidden from the sight of man for eons, have trickled down from remote antiquity and all that stuff. The way I do it is I tend to handle an anthology like I would do an issue of Crypt of Cthulhu. I invite contributors, and sometimes I'm even nosy enough to suggest a title and see what they come up with. I used to do that in Shudder Stories all the time. Hugh Cave and I had great fun. I'd send him one like, can you do me a Weird Menace story with the title Brides of the Blood Fiend from Hell? And naturally, you would come through with the winner. Or my friend Chuck Hoffman. Oh boy, was this a triumph. I said, how about Plaything for the Chortling Fiend? And, oh boy, I tell you, he did not disappoint either. Sometimes it's kind of fun to do that and really guide the focus of the thing. I don't generally issue open invitations to all who will come, because I just don't have the time to sift through a mountain of submissions. Others do, and that's probably a better way to go. But I zero in on people that I know pretty well, and I know their work, and I know I'm going to like it, and I'm rarely disappointed there. Oh, let's see, one thing in my mythos anthologies, I try not to include readily available work by Lovecraft unless I really feel like it's got to be there if you're including material stories that lead up to it and then go away from it. I figure, yeah, you do kind of need it there, maybe to refresh your memory. But on the whole, I figure people if they're buying my anthologies, they probably got other ones, and they probably have a lot of stories that I might want to toss in, but what the heck, they've already got them, so why make them waste the money? I love the anthologies by Glenn Barris and Brian Sammons and, oh, various other ones. Laird Barron, of course, is doing them now, and several other ones I just can't think of offhand, being such a senile old coot. These books of Cthulhu and best supernatural fiction, some of these I've not had time to read, and but there's always good stuff in them, and it's really an embarrassment of riches. I get to the point where I think, oh, this looks good, I better order a copy of this, and I thought, how long am I going to live? Am I going to get through all these books? Because there really is a huge flood of good stuff. Pickman's Easel, a pseudonym, writes, Caitlin Kiernan is my modern Lovecraft equivalent and has kept me interested in the genre past the great one himself. Are you familiar with her work, and how do you as a Lovecraft scholar feel it compares? Also in that vein, who do you recommend to bulk out my modern author collection? I lean more toward the horror than so-called sci-fi. Oh, no, there's no so-called, I just can't read it. I mean, sci-fi, generally. My favorite stories are Pickman's Model, never would have guessed that, Music of Eric Zahn, and the Dunwich Horror, although there are many, many others I adore. Well, I thought Caitlin Kiernan's remarks on the documentary, in which I also took up space, Lovecraft, Fear of the Unknown, were quite apt and informed. I've only read a few of her stories, but I thought they were mighty good. And so I think you couldn't go wrong there. And I've heard the stuff I haven't read is certainly mighty fine. So I don't know her work well enough to give much of an informed answer, but I have a very positive reaction and impression from what I have read. Others with whose work I'm more familiar would be Laird Barron, who really has a Lovecraftian vision, and luckily not just the same thing. It's the kind of thing Lovecraft would have loved in many ways. It's not just slavish imitation. There's a real creepiness about it, a real cosmic vision, terrific. I love, of course, Joe Pulver, who is absolutely unique in his style. This guy combines a kind of blank verse poetry with hard-boiled narrative, also with a cosmic vision. The guy is just amazing. So he's certainly on my list. His style is a bit more conventional in his first novel, Nightmare's Disciple, though equally unique, because he's like a chameleon depending on what's happening. You think you're reading Ligotti or Howard or Raymond Chandler. He's just amazing. Tom Ligotti, I think, is incredibly great, a real prophet, a real visionary, amazing stuff. In fact, a sermon I did many years ago called The Desolation of Holiness appears in a collection of my sermons called Preaching Deconstruction that's available on Amazon, and it another version of it will be appearing in the fourth R, the magazine of the West Star Institute, the sponsoring group for the Jesus Seminar, in a month or so. It's based on some stuff from Ligotti, I think, from Dr. Locrian's Asylum. And oh boy, terrific. Let's see. I love Cody Goodfellow's nearly insane imagination and stylistic mastery. His huge novel, published as two because it's so two parts, Radiant Dawn and Ravenous Dusk, are incredible. The way he hybridizes these genres, techno thriller, mythos, horror, etc., etc., the guy is absolutely amazing. And there are plenty of others, but I suppose Don Webb, this guy, has a unique gift for making you feel you're there amid very weird magical happenings. And of course that might have something to do with the fact that he's the head of the Temple of Set. I interviewed him for Point of Inquiry, a podcast I used to do for Center for Inquiry. And it's hard to know where to stop. Mark Rainey is a genius. In fact, this guy's got so much talent, he ought to share the wealth with others if there's some way of having a talent transfusion. He's a musician, he's an artist, he's a terrific writer. He's one of these guys, well, like all these I've named, who I read their work and say, thanks for showing me how I can't write. Mark's stories have this vivid, again, sense of you are there. And Stefano Leddy is another one. Doesn't write that much, but you feel you're in the real world. And I remember reading one of his tales where I as we reached the conclusion, I thought, no, it can't be. And then, holy mackerel, how did he come up with this ending? And there's a lot of other ones. Anne Schwader, again, I tell you, I can just go on and on, obviously, but these are some of my favorites. I'm not saying necessarily they're better than any of your favorites. This is just more, it's obvious to me these people have great talent. It's just that I admit plenty of others do too. And if I kept on with this, I could think of more. Don't mean to slight anybody that I didn't happen to name here. Justin Brown says, I love the voices you give characters. Can you speak to how you assign a voice to a character? For example, when you read as Lovecraft, what do you base his voice on? Same question for other voices you find yourself doing. I can't remember what voices I have used for anybody on this podcast except Lovecraft, but with him, I try to do Peter Griffin from Family Guy, yeah, because he lives in Rhode Island, and I figure it's just, I love to, you know, make these clashes and these incongruities. And the most merciful thing in the world, I think, is the inability of the human mind to correlate all its contents, and so forth. It's just for yucks. I've done more, now, also, I will do different voices for different questioners, depending on where they live. And now I do this more in the Bible Geek podcast. And so there, like if somebody is from Louisiana, I will do the voice of, what's his name? Gilbert, Bill Dotrieve's cousin who lives in New Orleans in King of the Hill. And that's a standby. Then I do a generic caricature Chicago accent for anybody that's from there and sends in a question. Do a sort of a bad Ted Kennedy for any Bostonian. A general Southern accent for Southerners. Kind of a bad George Bush impression for Texans. Then foreign language ones. Oh boy, do I love those. So my German accent and French, Spanish, and often they're just ridiculous, and I always apologize, saying I don't mean to mock any of these accents. I just love them so much, I can't control myself. Of course, it's always great when there's a Scot sending a question in. But then also, when I read Bible passages from there, in that podcast, if it's from the Epistle of James, or James speaking in the book of Acts, it turns out to be James Mason. When it's John, the narrator of the Gospel, or maybe John in Revelation, I figure, why not the Apostle John Wayne? When it's the Old Testament generally, or the voice of God specifically, it's Charlton Heston. My people, here are the Ten Commandments. Commandment number one, thou shalt have the right to keep and bear arms. Jesus is my attempt at Willem Dafoe, and I guess my favorite would be the Apostle Paul, who in my fevered imagination is the Apostle Paul Lind. For God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, and so on and so forth. So I like to deal with serious stuff in a funny way, and that's why I do the voices, and that's where a bunch of them come from. Yeah, okay. One thing I would not dare try to do is imitate colleagues and friends in either field, but I figure with the big names it's okay. Michael T. Shell of Philadelphia says, I've been listening to your podcast through iTunes for a bit now, especially as I work as a clerk for the IRS here in Philadelphia. I do some writing myself, combining science fiction, fantasy, and horror as much as possible. I'm also in the process of reading the compilation of works from Clark Ashton Smith that you edited for Chaosium. That could be the Sathagwa cycle, or probably the Clark Ashton cycle. I'm also an avid gamer of Pathfinder, a spin-off, if you will, of Dungeons & Dragons, which I appreciate, as their bestiaries often have Lovecraftian beasties, including the Zoogs from the One Tale of HPL I would have to consider my favorite, The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. I have a few questions for you. One, do you know of any stories, either by Lovecraft, his contemporaries, or his devotees, writing after his untimely demise, where the location is somewhere around or even in Hawaii? I ask as I like tiki music and should like to maybe read some weird fiction of the state at some point. Given the amount of... to pause with an answer here. Given the amount of Lovecraftian fiction with which I cannot begin to keep up, I would have to suspect that there is some stuff set out there, but I don't know. I mean, the closest I know is South Pacific Islands from Innsmouth connections and all that, but I really have no idea. I welcome any information from any listener. Two, my own work is more action-oriented than much of the Old Man of Providence's material, with major characters being humanoid and humanized animals. If my protagonist actively hunts down and kills night gaunts, the Mi-Go, Gugs, and the like, how far from Lovecraft am I going? Am I writing more like Robert E. Howard or Clark Ashton Smith as I do this? Michael, I guess you are, but I don't see what the problem would be. Lovecraft did go in an Edgar Rice Burroughs direction in the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. That's certainly clear. And that I wrote an article or two about that. One was called... Cosmic Fear and the Fear of the Lord, where I talked about Randolph Carter being like John Carter of Mars. And Brian Lumley has pursued that direction more in his Hero and Eldon stories and Titus Crow and so on, which I really enjoy very much. I know there are a lot of people groaning, oh, Lovecraft would never have written anything like this. Well, I'm not so sure of that, as I've just said, given the Burroughs connection. But who cares if he wouldn't? What is? Does it have to be? Is there some sort of Lovecraftian Sharia? Some law governing how you can use Lovecraft elements in fiction? Yeah, I don't think so. So I think, and again, Cody Goodfellow, he, as I've just said, he hybridizes Lovecraft with techno thrillers. I love the result, and so I would suggest you keep going, stick to your guns there. Let's see, this is from David Edstall. When will your annotated Lovecraft be available at Chaosium? I'm ready to pre-order. Let me pause there. I was told it would be this year, though I know the mills of the old ones grind slow. I don't know if that'll happen or not. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and let's see what happens. Then back to David. Do you find that your obsession with Lovecraft mythology and Christian mythology are related? I find myself very interested in both, and I wonder if there might be a connection somehow. The idea of, well, I got my two doctoral degrees in New Testament on the one hand and systematic theology on the other. And both of those denote an interest in data and lore and traditions and so forth, and how they've been put together in different ways, almost like a kaleidoscope. And the same things grab me about Lovecraft, and I might add superheroes from the comic books. I can usually tell you a hero's secret identity, their origin, their powers, their villains, and stuff like that. I just love all that kind of thing. I happen to be totally tin-eared when it comes to sports, but I gather my obsession is analogous to that of those sports fans that can tell you the statistics for every player and all of that. It's kind of fun to keep all this data in your head, and I love it in the case of both Christian biblical mythology and that of Lovecraft and the mythos and all of that. Let's see. As for a connection, I don't see much of one. I think Augustin Leth's dependence upon Catholicism and his reinterpretation of Lovecraft is overdone. I don't think that really has that much to do with it in Derleth's stories. There is an occasional element of parody of Christianity in Lovecraft, like in The Dunwich Horror and The Call of Cthulhu. He pokes fun at Adventists and such. To me, the whole vision of the mythos, the cosmic void of meaninglessness in which humanity's importance is undermined, it has much more in common with Buddhism, I think, than with Christianity. Though I would argue that though Lovecraft didn't view it this way, what he was describing is an essentially religious vision, as Fritz Leiber argued, just not filled with dogmatic theology. Okay, David says, I just got done listening to your debate with William Lane Craig on YouTube. I'd love to see a team up with Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Lawrence Krauss on stage one day against some of these artful, slippery apologists. And it would be kind of fun, a tag team match, though I think that might be kind of like the upcoming Republican presidential debates. Way too many of us cook spoiling the stew, but of course, it would be a great privilege to appear with any of those gents. And finally, David says, from Software's recent game Bloodborne, missing a word here, I think. It was a game that started off simple and soon became drenched in Lovecraftian horror as one progresses further and further into the game's dark story. Do you believe that having such explicit use of cosmic horror in such a high-profile game will draw new fans to the genre and maybe even inspire other games to draw on these themes as a way to tell new stories? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I should certainly think so, because that's exactly what happened with these role-playing games that drew a lot of people into reading Lovecraft and associated authors, some of whom have decided, well, who needs the games? I'm sticking with the text. Though, of course, many prominent and important Lovecraft scholars and writers are still avid gamers. I just don't have the interest in that. Again, it's like a tin ear. I'm just not picking up on the signal. Those who do, you know, all honor to them, but I'm sure that you were right, and that's going to happen just as it did with Call of Cthulhu and so forth. Success breeds imitation, which I'm happy about, and so I imagine other games will do the same. It's pretty contagious, as you know, the old mythos. Well, that's it. The slime bucket wasn't all that deep, and I need you to send in more questions. And hopefully you'll do that soon, and we'll get back together on The Lovecraft Geek. Thanks for being with me on this.
The Lovecraft Geek was recorded by Robert M. Price and produced by John Felix. Catch up with Mike Davis and Mythos communities everywhere by devouring the free online Lovecraft e-zine at lovecraftzine.com for events, news, and information. To catch up with Dr. Price's projects, purchase merchandise, and donate to help support Dr. Price and his family, please visit robertmprice.mindvendor.com. Thanks for listening to The Lovecraft Geek. I'm Torrin Atkinson.